Because I feel like he has enormous potential, but you know, it's the surrounding pieces that he needs. He needs a line that can protect him,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and more targets on the receiving end.
Yeah,
and I feel like he can do magic because he's fast. Obviously,
he is fast. He is athletic.
Yeah,
and also, like, y'all invested the rough years.
Yeah,
you know, you're gonna let him go somewhere for nothing so he can flourish. And
because he's gonna
go
flourish.
Crazy.
If he goes somewhere else, we're going to be like, it's going to be that ex that glows up after the breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, damn, look at who I had.
Is that too loud? We got Tony Baker in the building.
The moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were tussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters are gone from hardcore hustling.
This is one of my favorite songs.
With words and ideas, my ears
ever. I don't know, can the people hear what's playing?
Some of them.
This ain't no time.
Man,
you
depending on how they receive the podcast,
this is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah.
If you can't hear what we listen to, it's Respiration by Black Star.
Oh, thank you, because I wasn't going to tell him.
Oh.
I was just going to let it be a mystery.
Respiration by Black Star featuring Common, man. It's an amazing record.
Were y'all going crazy in Chicago when y'all heard this? When y'all heard Common on this? Or?
When this came out, I was in New Mexico State.
Okay.
I wasn't even in Chicago. It's just... It's a perfect song. And what's crazy is I bought that album, when it first came out. But for some reason, like, Respiration didn't really get my attention until later. And then I ended up buying the single. I was like, but I already have the album. What the hell was? I don't know how I missed it within the whole framework of the whole album.
Yeah.
And then when I had the single, I was like, yo, I had the song the whole time.
That's so funny.
It was weird.
What was on the single? Did you have the instrumental?
It was, I think there was an instrumental on there, and there was like a remix on there, I think.
You ever rap over the Respiration instrumental?
Nah.
You ever?
I did rap
on?
Over Whoa, though.
Okay.
By Black Rob.
The Whoa instrumental?
Yeah. Recorded.
Recorded.
It's on a disc somewhere. Me rapping.
Oh,
over
on
Whoa.
A disc.
Yes.
Fancy.
I got to dig in the crates and release it.
I got to drop that.
Yeah,
the OG Tony Baker Whoa freestyle.
Yeah, we was rapping in college, man. I was like, I'm gonna rap over this Whoa beat.
I think everybody has that phase in college where they're like, man, forget these books.
Yeah.
But man, we need to be rapping.
Man. We need to be dropping bars.
You went to New Mexico State?
Yeah. Yep, that's in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Las Cruces, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How is it going to college in New Mexico?
It was great, man. I loved my New Mexico experience. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're not going to get a lot of, you know, black folks there, but just the vibes and the friendships and the relationships I had, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where my sons were conceived.
Okay.
All that. So, you know, New Mexico has a lot of great memories for me.
Gotcha.
And going to New Mexico State, you know, all the black kids are just going to coagulate
because that's how it was at the University of Georgia. We all just had, you know, we had Bugger, black university.
Wait, so it wasn't a lot of black people there?
I mean, okay, depends on your perception of a lot. Like, undergrads, 20,000.
That's a lot.
So 10% of 20,000 is like 4,000.
Oh, okay. Right.
Oh, wait, no. It's like 2,000.
Okay.
So, you know, we might have had 2,000. It might have been like, you know, 1,000 that really rock with each other.
Okay.
Another 500 that rock with the other.
Uh-huh.
And another 500 who just like came for school and bounced.
Yeah.
You know?
That's it. How close is that school to Atlanta?
About 2 hours.
Okay.
About an hour and a half. Depending on your perception of Atlanta. There's some people east of Atlanta that, you know, wouldn't claim the full 2 hours.
Right.
But also, they, you know, their idea of where Atlanta starts is different from mine. I'm from the west side.
Okay. Let me ask you this about Atlanta and Georgia in general. Because, you know, how far away from Atlanta does it turn white?
Does it turn white?
Southern and you know, scary.
It's a while before it gets scary.
Okay.
The scary keeps getting further and further, you know.
Uh-huh.
I think the scary's starting to come in. I think
they're coming back.
It's coming back. Yeah. You know, I think white flight was definitely a thing.
Uh-huh.
And so growing up, the all the surrounding areas, you know, you never really felt really scary outside of the policing.
Uh-huh.
The police, you know, when you get outside of Atlanta, the police are different.
Okay.
And then it takes a while before it's like, okay, everything's different.
So about 3 hours, four?
No, not three, four. Maybe an hour and
a
half.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah. But like radius.
Right.
You could go 2 hours
with
no issues within the radius. Yeah.
Okay. Because I always wondered that about Georgia, you know what I'm saying? Because we automatically think Atlanta is like.
Atlanta is
the face of Georgia.
Bubble in a very red state.
Yeah.
Even the dirt is red.
Exactly. Yes, I always wondered that. Because I've only been to Atlanta, Georgia, and I don't think I've been anywhere else in Georgia.
Yet. Okay.
Yeah, so Atlanta's my only Georgia experience
so far. Gotcha. I mean, the best foot, you know, like the Atlanta's the only city in Georgia that's going to get an Olympics, you know.
Yeah.
They're
not going to do it in
they're not going to do an Augusta Olympics, you know. Shout out to Augusta, but yeah.
They're not going
to
do it in Columbus, Georgia.
I don't think Columbus going to get an Olympics, you know. They might get an event.
Yeah.
They'll get an event, but they're not going to get a whole Olympics. For sure. Tony Baker, I'm such a huge fan of yours. I enjoy watching you perform. I met you, I feel like, my first trip out here.
Mm.
And, you know, I could tell that you had dominance within your circle. I felt like you were like a ringleader of sorts. And, you know, I always respected you as a comedian and just
what you
do on stage. It's so much fun to watch.
Likewise, man. I feel like I met you doing Stand Up for Diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Did we do it at the same time or were you a year after?
I did it in 2012, so I might have been a year after.
Yeah, you were that following year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yo,
you
I
did
like
the
this
Tone
guy.
Bell, I did, Lucas Brothers year.
You know, I did the Shin Wang.
Okay.
Who else was in mine? I feel like
some epic groups.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who else was in that group. I think Sam Comro was in there with me.
Were you with Phoebe Robinson?
Yes, I was with Phoebe.
Okay,
I was with Phoebe.
I was on that website's head.
Yeah.
I would be on that website all the time. I'd look on the alumni and be like looking up different people. Like,
yeah.
Okay, this is how Hannibal got on. Lil Rel, they discovered Deion Cole. I had no clue that it's so many other things. I'm just on the way, like, oh, the Eric Andre show happened because of this. Okay, who's Jordan Carlos? Like, I was looking at that website and just like, you know.
Yeah, man.
Thinking, that's the pathway to success. You got to do NBC Stand Up. Yeah,
NBC Stand Up for Diversity, man. Mm-hmm. I was within that final, you know, circle. And then, you know, we did the showcases for NACA and all
mm-hmm,
that. So I got some college gigs out of it.
Yeah.
You know, didn't get a TV show, but, you know.
No, very
got the college
did.
Gig.
Yeah. Tone Bell might be the only one
he
that,
rocked
like,
it.
Got a TV show.
He rocked it to the fullest.
Mm-hmm,
like, you saw that. You saw that transition.
Yeah.
It was, man. He was, you know who else? I don't know why his name is escaping me right now, and I know him. Well, black dude from Seattle has a great podcast. He's been in several shows and movies. Why am I tripping on his name? Black dude.
Funches?
Ron Funches. I feel like I did it. Was he my year?
Maybe.
I feel like he was my year, too. I feel like he catapulted from that too, you know. Even if he didn't win, I feel like because he was a regular on that Chris D'Elia show, Undateable.
Yeah.
So it was like I feel like he rocked it well too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why his name just. I've been terrible with names lately, man.
Really?
I've been having old man brain with the simplest of names.
What do you do in a situation like somebody comes up, hey Tony, and like you the name's not registering? What do you do?
I just don't say the name back. And I'll be like, because people always say my full name. They'd be like, Tony Baker. And I'd be like, what's up, man? And I remember everybody's face, but it's like, damn, the name. And then let's say I'm with a girl in any capacity, you know, you always got to do the introduction.
You didn't introduce me.
Oh, they hate the non-introduction. So yeah. Because like, basically, I'm getting everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be like, hey, this is such and such. And then they got to jump right in.
I'm used to, like, I've given the speech many times where it's like, hey, I'm not going to remember all these people. Some people I have inside jokes with. Some people I have bits that I've doing, and we've been seeing each other for years.
Right.
But the name's just not going to click, and I'm going to need you to stick that hand out first and introduce yourself, please.
Please.
Please, for the both of us.
Yes.
So that I could eventually register this person. You could save a relationship.
Yes. Just jump in there regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I remember that name, we ain't got to it yet. Jump in there.
Yeah.
Jump in there. Please. Help me. Help. I'm always a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be like, oh, damn. But they remember my full name, 100%.
I hate the remember me.
Oh, my God. That's you're going to get your feelings hurt then.
I'll
keep it real. If you say remember me, I'll be like, I'm going to hurt your feelings.
You're not going to give me a roadmap. Nah. You're not going to say where. You're not going to say a year, a location. You're just going to, hey.
Don't ask.
No, don't ask.
What I won't do is lie.
Yeah, I'll lie. I say yes every time. Of course. Yeah. Yeah, I remember you every time.
Man.
Yeah. That's how I get messed up, though, because some people will remember me and they'll be complete strangers. That happens out here, too.
Oh, wow.
And so then it's like, you know, eventually I'll be like, man, I've been new dude. And they're like, we met last week. And it's like, I got remembered me last week.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You remember me? And I'll be like, no. Or people put me on blast. And be like, I'll be like, nice to meet you. Man, this is like the fifth time we met. I'm like,
See, I switched all my go-tos. Like, my go-to is good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you is good.
Yeah, yeah. Because then good to see you, that's universal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I got to go to that. Mm-hmm. I got to go with the good to see you.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I only nice to meet you if somebody nice to meet me first.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then if they call me out, it's like, well, why are you out here nice to meeting if you know we didn't meet? I'm just following your lead.
They pump faking.
Tony, I've only seen you out and about a couple times as far as the hanging side of things.
Yeah.
I wonder, do you do line dances? If you're at a party, if you're at a wedding or something, will you do a cha-cha slide? Will you do an electric slide?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
100%, man. I don't think I've ever been around an electric slide or cha-cha slide. Or what's the other one? There's another one.
The Tamia dance?
No. That's newer. I feel like
that one's got a lot of steps. That one you got to kind of get ready beforehand.
Yeah,
you can't learn that one on
I'm not going to do that one. With the electric slide, the cha-cha slide, and it's another one. It's another one of those line dance joints that the name is
the Mississippi Mud Slide.
No, it's a cha-cha again. Turn it out, and then it's the electric slide. And then it's
Cupid Shuffle.
Is it the Cupid Shuffle? I think it's the Cupid Shuffle. Those I participated in several times,
though. Okay.
Like, I'll get in on those, man. Absolutely. 100%. Cue the credits. Roll of black movie credits as we doing the electric slide.
I'm convinced that my generation does the electric slide to Candy because of The Best Man.
Okay, that's fair.
I think that we made that connection from, you know, seeing Terrence Howard and them doing the electric slide to Candy, that it's almost synonymous with the song. Like, I feel like my generation does it more to Candy than to the actual electric slide song. I feel like we do it to Candy and we do it to Frankie Beverly and Maze.
Okay.
More than we'll do it to the actual.
I think those are better choices than the actual.
Yeah. They might be better songs. They might be better songs.
Oh, 100% better songs.
Yeah.
100, without even. It's not even close. But yeah, I think those are better song choices to do it to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a fun dance to do.
It is a fun dance to do.
I'm all in.
A lot of room for you to interpret and switch it up and have fun, especially when you're in the front.
Absolutely, man. Mm-hmm. Put your own little signature on it.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't think of a time I turned it down.
Okay.
To where it's just like, oh, this is what we doing. I'm sliding in.
Would you do you swag surf?
I've done that. I think I've done it a couple times.
Okay.
I'll get
okay.
in on that. You know what I'm saying? Because Taylor Swift invented it.
That I don't think that's true. I think that's highly inaccurate.
According to the media. Taylor Swift, what's this new dance Taylor Swift done taught us?
You know who wasn't upset with Taylor Swift doing it? FLY, the guys who made it. The guys whose streams were skyrocketing.
Oh, come on.
They were like, leave her alone, please.
They was doing the Birdman hands for show.
Leave her alone. Why are y'all so upset with her? Y'all like, oh, this is not her dance. No, we will lease it. Listen, we will lease it to Taylor Swift.
They had no issue.
Shout out to FLY. I met them at a BET Awards after party.
Oh, you out here.
They saw me doing the Bankhead bounce, and they were like, where are you from? And then I was like, I'm from Atlanta. And then they were like, we're FLY. And I was like, oh, my God.
I remember the first time I saw the Bankhead bounce being done. It was the Benzor Beamer video by Outkast.
Okay.
That was my introduction to the Bankhead bounce. And I was like, yo, what's this they doing right here? They was doing it heavy in that video.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a very slept on Outkast record. It was on the New Jersey Drive soundtrack. That song is fire. Fire. Benzor Beamer. Yes.
That had a video. Yeah.
They were still in cars in the video. And they was being head bouncing after the car theft.
That's funny.
Yeah, man. That's one of the gems of Outkast. That don't get talked about enough. But that Bankhead bounce, they was in there rocking that joint.
Okay.
They start doing the Bankhead bounce towards the end of the video. They just doing it.
Yeah. They might not even be listening to this song while they're... But they're definitely doing it. That's definitely the main campaign.
Yeah, man. That was my intro.
There's a song, What's Up, What's Up? There's a version that D-Rock from the Yin Yang Twins did pre-Yin Yang Twins. And their Bankhead bouncing extremely hard.
Oh,
like they're like rolling their neck and then, yeah.
Where they at, man?
I don't know.
They
I hope
vanished.
They're okay. I hope the Yin Yang Twins are all right.
I heard one was having some health issues, but that's all I heard.
Yeah.
And but they really, they had their moment in the sun, and then it's like, we out.
Their moment in the sun. Someone posted a video of them heckling Monique at the BET Awards.
Wow.
Like, she was presenting, and then one of them was like, huh?
Oh.
And then she, like, started going back and forth with them. It's a great clip. Like, it's like, oh, my God. Another host would like crumble. But
it's like a
good showing of Monique's hosting ability, but also how much juice they had that they thought they could just take a moment at the BET Awards.
The Yin Yang Twin.
Mm-hmm. Tony, I've been told that you know the box office numbers of a lot of movies. How did that start? How did you start paying attention to the box office totals for?
I've always been obsessed with movies ever since I can remember anything.
Yeah.
I've always been into movies. So like my whole life. So, you know, I remember watching movies before I even started school for real. So it's like, I was always obsessed with movies. So as I got older, I would just become aware of like big movies and like you know, stuff like that, and so my parents always took us to the movies, so they planted the seed early. So as I grew, I'd be looking at the movie section in the Chicago papers, the Chicago Sun Times or the Tribune. I would look at the movie section and I'd be like, oh, I want to see this, I want to see that, and then I would look. They would have like the critic reviews in there.
Yeah,
and Roger Ebert gives it 3 stars. You know what I'm saying? And so, I'm looking at movies and I'm like, oh, they got 4 stars. So I'm equating the reviews to how long the movie stayed out. So it'd be like, I remember RoboCop, for example. It was like, it's 7 smash week, whatever. And I'm just looking at it. And I'm like, oh, the reviews must be good. So they're keeping it in theaters longer. I had no concept of the box office money. And so Unless it was like a huge hit and they would talk about, you know, Beverly Hills Cop made this. And I'm like, that's crazy. And so as I got older, then they started putting in the grosses in the paper. So, but they would, it was local. It was like, you know, this is how much this movie made in Chicago only.
Really?
Yeah, so it was like Die Hard 2 made $1 million in Chicago. And so I was like, oh, that's what's going on. So now I started searching for how much money these movies were making. I remember watching The Big Picture on MTV, and they would always get the top five at the box office. So now I'm just like, oh, okay.
So you had cable.
I did have cable. Yeah.
Okay.
So now I'm getting the concept of, okay, box office. I remember this one kid in my class. He was like, yo, man, New Jack City made $5 million in 3 days. And I was like, in 3 days? Not knowing that they always just did the weekend. Mm-hmm. It would give you the weekend grosses. I was thinking it was for a full week. So I was like, damn, that's crazy. And so I was just learning, and then when they started regularly putting in the box office gross for the nation in there, I was just like, oh. So I followed it every week to this day.
That's interesting, local, like, idea of box office gross. I remember hearing some of that with, like, some of the Spider-Man, because they were, like, breaking records and stuff. But, yeah, I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. You were in Chicago at the time. You said the Tribune and the Sun-Times. So those were two separate papers at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And Roger Ebert writes on one, Gene Siskel writes on the other one.
Yeah.
Did you have a preference?
Well, my mom liked the Sun-Times. She would always get the Chicago Sun-Times.
Okay.
For whatever reason, she was just partial to the Sun-Times. So that was the one that was always in the house. And so, but the Tribune was the one that had the numbers in there.
Okay.
So then I switched over to the Tribune. Mm. I was like, you know, going against the family, if you will. I ain't raised no Tribune kid. And so I was like, yo, the Chicago Tribune got the box office numbers. And I used to make my own movie section.
Okay.
That's how deep I was. And I would make up my own movies, put like myself in there and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I would give reviews and everything. I would just make these horrible drawings. Like, I can't draw for shit, but I was like, yo, this. And I would just do that for fun. So, and to this day, I still, every week.
You were critiquing movies. Now, were you making the movies, or were you just making the criticisms?
I was just making the movie sections and giving them the reviews. That's all I was doing, man. I wasn't going no further than that.
So Steven Spielberg made Close Encounters with his friends in high school. You're like, nah, forget that. Man. I'm about to make movie critiques.
Yes. I'm reviewing movies that don't exist. That's what the hell I'm doing. And I'm making the movie section so you can see what movie sucks and what movie is critically acclaimed. But to this day, I still monitor. Yeah. Like, I can tell you right now, number one this weekend was not Dune 2.
Mm.
Oh, it's Kung Fu Panda 4. Made $57 million over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah, and Dune 2 is number 2 with 40-something. So, yeah, man, I'm still in this life.
You're still in it.
I'm still all in, man.
What... If you had only one genre of film, what genre of film? If you just the rest of your life you can't watch any other genre, you can only watch one, what you doing?
This is a hard hitting question. It would have to be action, man.
Okay.
Action is like action gets me most excited.
Yeah.
To see. So I would go action. That's the one that, you know, it gets the adrenaline flowing. Like, you know, if you look at my greatest films of all time, it's going to be a lot of dramas in there. It's going to be a lot of, you know, crime dramas and, you know, stuff of that nature. But the movies that excite me the most are action.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have to go with that. Even comedy would rank low, surprisingly.
Really?
Even though, you know, I'm a comedian, obviously, but it's like, I rarely get super excited about comedies.
But, I mean, I hear you, but a good one, I feel like, shapes so much.
Oh, for sure. Like, when it's good, it's so rewatchable and so, like, you know, it stays in your brain.
Yeah.
But it's rare that I get those feelings, especially as I got older. It was just like the comedies weren't like, you know, when me and Kev did that top 10 black comedies list.
Yeah.
It was only one movie in there from the 2000s.
Lottery Ticket?
No, it was like Black Dynamite.
Okay. Okay.
That was the only, you know what I'm saying, like from the 2000 era. So yeah. I was just like, that really says a lot about, you know, how rare it is for like a true comedy classic to come along.
Yeah.
Like action, it gets you all the time. Like you'll see an action movie, you're like, man, now we on John Wick. Now, you know, the Marvel movies, it's always some good action.
Because action, we're down for the sequel. Yeah. We're down for you to, like, we know who the characters are. Right. That means we get to the action faster.
Yeah.
You know, so we're do another Mission Impossible until y'all break Tom Cruise.
Till he's in a wheelchair.
We will accept it. I do like how, like, the further action movies go, the more powerful the main character is.
Yeah.
Like, the first Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise, human being.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, like doing stuff that you can believe a guy right. could do.
Yeah.
Now he's slamming people through sinks.
It's crazy now. It's crazy.
It was, it's like, wait, when could he break a sink,
man,
before?
And they made that transition fast. If you look at Mission Impossible 2, he was doing some wild shit in that.
Well,
one.
That's John Woo. Woo came through and he was like, let's get crazy.
We going up the ante.
Yeah, we're starting on a mountain.
Yeah.
We got motorcycles, okay? Yeah. We
you gonna do kickflips in slow motion. Doves coming in.
Two
pistols. Slow mo. Dramatics. You going, the villain's gonna catch a scarf as it flies off Tandy Newton's neck.
Did you see the killer? Speaking of John Woo, did you see the killer before or after you listened to Only Built for Cuban Links?
I saw it before.
Okay.
So, you know.
Dubbed or with the subtitles? Okay, so.
It was Dub C
in the
West Side Connection. Because I saw the killer early on. My brother had it. And
okay.
I was like, oh, man, this is just. That and Hard Boiled, I saw.
Okay.
Early on. So by the time, you know, I heard Only Built for Cuban Links, I was like, yo, this is from the killer. So I was in. But. When End of the Wu-Tang came out, and they talking about the killer tape.
Yo, where my killer tape at?
I didn't know what they were talking about at that time. I hadn't seen killer yet.
I thought it was a Ghostface killer tape.
I didn't know what they were talking about. I thought they was black Italians in there arguing.
Yo, where my killer tape
at? Where my killer tape at, girl?
Smoking blunts, bitch.
Why you ain't get my shit when I let you hold it, man? Niggas came through with 40s and blunts. Man, I don't want to hear that shit, man. Yeah, so I didn't know they were talking about the John Woo flick at that time. But yeah, definitely.
Super Dub.
John Woo was my guy for a minute, man.
Really?
Oh, man. Between those movies, and then when he transitioned into American films, he did Hard Target with Jean-Claude. That was his first American joint.
Okay.
And then he did Face Off.
Ooh, that was him?
Yeah, he did Broken Arrow and then Face Off.
Okay.
And Face Off was just, you know what I'm saying? Premise is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. But I've never looked at John Travolta and been like, man, he's Nicolas Cage shaped.
When you look at head shapes, no two actors are more different than John and Nicolas Cage.
In the 70s, in the 80s, on, 97, man. I've never looked at John Travolta's head and Nicolas Cage's head and been like, man, you can swap them.
Man, you can swap their faces.
You can swap
even
it
when
up.
You do the... You do the split where you got one actor, it don't even match up.
No. I did like the jail with the boots.
Oh, yeah.
And the magnetic
that
stuff.
That was something different, man.
That got me in. That got me engaged into the movie.
That movie, I'm telling you, man, from an action standpoint, that movie satisfied the hunger for action. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And from an acting standpoint, I'm sure... They loved playing these roles because they got to be two different people. And Nicolas Cage had even said, like, man, I wish I could have been Castor Troy longer. You know what I'm saying? Because since he was really Castor Troy, he had to go in the good guy mode for most of the film. And then John was able to. And so, because, you know, it always looks more fun to be the villain because you could do whatever.
Right.
You could just be unhinged.
You can be unhinged. Yeah. You hang out the car window, you know, you get the cool lines.
Yeah.
Tossing a cigarette, you know.
Wild.
Yeah.
And so that The premise was ridiculous, but it was so entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was fire.
Do superhero movies count as action movies? How do you feel about that? Is that controversial?
It's 100% action for me.
Okay.
100%. Like, you know what I'm saying? You know, depending on the type of superhero movie, but the vast majority, 95% is action.
Okay.
Because the comic books that we read, you know, there's mad action in there. You know, that's Avengers, true. X-Men, Daredevil, Spider-Man, it's all action. They fighting for the fight set.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, absolutely 100% action.
Batman's a detective, but he's a fighting detective. Yeah, he's a scrapping
detective. He in the alleys, man.
Yeah, he's in the alleys. He's on the subway.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, and those are the movies that excite me. It's like, man, I can't wait till that come out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any blind spots? Do you have any movies that you're like, I know very popular, but I don't rock with?
I don't get the Big Lebowski.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Okay.
People hold that movie in a high regard. I've given it several chances. I'm like, man, this ain't no Raising Arizona. This ain't you know, no country for old men. I just don't get the Big Lebowski.
Just by itself.
Yeah.
You cool with the brothers. It's just.
It's not that it's a bad film, but I'm just like, I don't get the hype on that one. That's one of the major ones.
It would be on all the time, and I would just be like, what am I missing? Maybe I got to see it from the beginning.
I'm missing something.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't even put it top five Coen Brothers movies for me.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay.
I know that's a popular one. I'm trying to think of other ones that I'm just like. I know there's more. Like, if I just sat and was like, what movies do people love that I'm just like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's whatever. The Notebook.
Okay.
It's whatever.
I couldn't see you. I'd be surprised if I heard, like, yeah, man, Tony was just sitting watching The Notebook, you know?
It's whatever, man.
Mm-hmm.
One
thing I do remember is you watching the Verses, the beginning, like the first Swiss Beats and Just Blaze. I mean, not Just Blaze, well,
Tim.
That, but the Swiss Beats and Tim in the pandemic.
Yeah.
IG Live. Swiss Beats had to go to his car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you watching that, and I remember every Verses after that, you having, like, a score, you know, regardless or whatever, but, like, did you think something special was happening when you were watching that first Verses?
No, I just thought it was dope. I was just like, yo, man, they just going track for track.
Yeah.
And I was invested. I was just like, all right, let's get it. Mm-hmm. And so I was just in there. You know what I'm saying? And so as it kept going, I was just like, I was in there every time. Like, when
Me
they were
too.
Having Verses,
Me
unless
too.
It was like two people I really wasn't familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a couple of producers. I forget which two. And I was just like, I don't really know they stuff like that, so I'm gonna just fade out. But like, and I'd just be in there. And people was just, and you know, those people be mad in the comment section, like, Tony just looking for clout. I'm like, no, I'm really invested.
I'm
here.
Into it.
I'm commenting.
Into it. DJ Premier versus the RZA. I want to see what the RZA's house look like.
Man.
I want to, you know what I'm saying? I want to hear what choices they make, like the whole thing.
I was all in, you know what I'm saying? Because these are two of my favorite producers, so it's just like, of course I'm going to be in there. And then, you know, people are like, why are you rating it? This is just for the culture. Like, no, it's a Verses.
It's called Verses. It's not called Play Music Together.
Right. It's not called
musical
pay
friendship.
Homage.
It's Verses.
It's Verses. We going track for track.
Track for track.
And so I love that. I even did that recently on my TikTok. I went TikTok live because I'm trying to do my TikToks more.
Right when the government bans it.
Right. That's when I come in like, what's going on? Slang. I'm like, oh. So I was in my, because you can play music on TikTok live. Instagram, like, community guidelines. So I did Doggy Style versus The Chronic, track for track.
Okay.
And so that was the first one I did. Because I feel like, personally, Doggy Style is a superior album.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same camp.
It's birthed out of the Chronic, but I feel like it's refined.
Sure.
And the tracks hold up better overall on Doggy Style.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that.
I mean, Nothing But the G Thang is goated as far as the best song out of the two albums. Sure.
Yeah.
But overall, when we did side by side, track for track,
I could see that.
Doggy Style was killing the Chronic. But people still holding on to the Chronic. I'm just like, but you just heard, you saw the people, and you know, there's people in the live, and it was just like, nah, this, you know, songs of RBX.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to songs with,
have you ever seen a killer?
His lyrics don't hold up, man.
I drop bombs like Hiroshima. Come on, man.
His lyrics don't hold up. No disrespect to RBX, but
no,
the lyrics didn't hold
to
up.
RBX.
You know?
But yeah.
So it was just like,
what
yo,
about
it's
when
right
they
here.
Said Chickity Check. You're not going to take that in consideration? They said Chickity Check.
Chickity Check, man. But it was just like, nah, man. Doggy Style to me is one of the best albums ever.
It's one of the best albums. A lot of your faves from the East Coast pay homage to.
Oh, man, that was.
You know, they playing the shiznit when Biggie gets out of jail, I'm ready to die. Murder Was the Case is sampled in The Evils.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't get. The moments aren't reasonable. I feel like, and structurally, Reasonable Doubt and Ready to Die, they're definitely listening to Doggy Style.
100%.
Yeah.
100%, because Ready to Die had that West Coast edge that was going on
mm-hmm,
around that time
mm-hmm.
bled into Ready to Die.
Oh, for sure.
I was just like, oh, this is because at that time, you know, of course, Into the Wu-Tang was gritty, but they were so unique in their own sound. That it was like, all right, they've gone elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, they went left field and it
like,
was brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just like, I've never heard anything like this anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But as opposed to like Ready to Die, it was just like, because you know, the East Coast had a certain sound they were sticking to in that period of time in the 90s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when Biggie came.
Bum stickity.
Yeah, it was just like, and the beats were really like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, a lot of them sounded the same,
mm-hmm,
the beats.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Ready to Die came in, it was cinematic, it was gritty, it was polished, it was all of these
right,
things.
Right.
And I was just like, yo, I ain't never heard nothing like this either. On the East Coast.
Right.
So, yeah. So, and I feel like Doggy Style is that album. I remember when that came out, you know, it broke records. It was just like, that's why people get mad at me. You know, the Tupac stands. They get mad if you say anything that's not hailing Pac as the ultimate everything. People be like, man, you hating. And Faison Love has said one time that at one point Snoop was bigger than Tupac.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tupac stands are like, nah, man. I was like, yes. I was there in real time. When Doggy Style came out, it was just like an event. It was like the highest selling debut week of any album in any genre at that time.
Any, he had the radio.
Yeah.
He had television and solid album.
And his rise was more instant than Pac. Like, Pac had a slow build that people don't realize. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
when Tupacalypse Now came out, it didn't do anything earth shattering. It was
mm-hmm.
just like, all right, Brenda's Got a Baby, that's a cool track. You know what I'm saying? Sales was just mediocre. And then when Strictly for My Niggas came out, you know, he started building, gaining ground, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Snoop Dogg came out. It was the deep cover song, Nothing But a G Thing. So it was just like when Snoop's album came out, and this is rapid fire, it was like, yo, we got to get this.
Yeah.
And so people don't realize that. They looking at it, you know.
I'm in elementary school, rolling down the street in my big wheel trying to get a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
You know? Like... Yeah.
How old were you in 93?
I was 5.
Jesus Christ.
But I'm saying it hit me, man. In kindergarten.
Amir probably wasn't even born in 93. When was you born, Amir? 95. Oh, my God.
95.
That's when, damn, 95?
Man, Anthony Edwards was born in 2001.
Man, listen.
I have his shoes. I have a tennis shoes of a man that was born in 2001.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That, man, listen, man. So when Doggy Style came out in 93, I'm a teenager.
Okay.
And so I'm prime fully age. Cognizant of what's going on. Got I'm not you. I'm not looking back and reading about shit or watching old clips.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing everything in real time.
When they say biatch, you're like, man, this is hitting.
Now, I remember when it was new. I'm like, biatch. And we going to the principal's office. You know what I'm saying? So you know, you gotta give people that were really around then that extra mm-hmm. perspective on who was doing what at what time.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? And so people don't realize that. They just be mad. Tupac was always him.
Yeah.
Which he was, but it was he didn't become a white hot superstar until.
Right. Well, like, you know, 93, he's in Poetic Justice, he's in Above the Rim.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of stuff, but movies are a slower build. You got to wait for them to be on video. You got to wait for, you know, like, right. Like it's a while before in that time a movie has the impact that album does.
Right, for sure. Especially for, like, you know, if you look at Poetic Justice and Above the Rim, they didn't set the box office on fire, you know.
Yeah.
Poetic Justice made way less than Boys in the Hood.
Really?
Boys in the Hood set the box office on fire, you know what I'm saying? With a low budget.
I know nothing about the finances of Boys in the Hood. And when I go back and look at totals, I feel like those numbers are skewed because of overtime and
international, because you adjust for inflation.
All kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Boys in the Hood, when it came out, the budget was extremely low. So when it came out the summer of 91, it's up against movies like Terminator 2 and stuff like that.
Jeez.
And it's still
Judgment Day.
It's making more money per screen than these big budget huge movies. So
per capita is important.
Absolutely.
Because black movies, you know, it's don't see screens. The same amount of screens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when Boys in the Hood comes out, it does over $50 million domestically. Which was
in
crazy.
In 91, that's
in
crazy.
In 91.
Yeah.
Very crazy bread.
Okay.
So, you know, that type of movie, it was like, yo, impact. So when John Singleton followed up with Poetic Justice, it only made 20-something. Because it was like, man, you know, when Poetic Justice was new, the reaction was, it was all right. It was like, you know what I'm saying? It was like a lot of people wasn't feeling it like that. Now when you look back, it's like you appreciate it now because Pac is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Pac could always act. And, you know, you appreciate it more now. But when it was live in real time, we was just like, menace to society.
Yeah.
You know? We was on that.
Okay.
After Boys in the Hood, it was like Menace was the movie of the moment. And then, you know, and then Above the Rim, another one, it was cool.
Yeah.
But it didn't shift any needles.
Have you heard that there's like a Harlem trilogy basically, I think New Jack City, Above the Rim, and Sugar Hill all exist kind of in the same world?
Wait, is Above the Rim, Sugar Hill, and what was the other one?
New Jack City.
Oh. I mean, they're all Harlem. I never even associated Harlem with Above the Rim.
Guy, I think.
Well, the director of Mario Van Peebles did New Jack City.
Yeah.
And then I forget the director of Above the Rim's name. And then Sugar Hill was a different director.
Mm-hmm.
And Sugar Hill is easily the darkest of the three.
Yeah.
Just that opening scene alone where they watch their mom OD on heroin, that shit is haunting.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, yo, this is one of the roughest scenes. We just getting started.
Wild movie.
And then they watch their dad get shot in the legs on the rooftop. It's just like,
mm-hmm.
They were really showing like the effects of drug dealing and drug use in that film. It was just super tragic.
Movies at that time made me scared to go to New York. I'm not going to lie. It made New York the scariest. I'm like, man, you could just be in the arcade one day and then you got to jump on rooftops. And
Juice.
You got to have a gun on you and stuff. Yeah.
Juice was also Harlem.
Yeah.
That might be part of the trilogy. I feel like it would fit more than Above the Rim.
Well, I think Juice was Ernest Dickerson.
That's Ernest Dickerson on director.
Yeah.
Director. Those other three movies all had different directors.
But I'm saying the writers.
Oh, the writer. Yeah, you saying the writers are the same guy.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. Because they had Harlem was on lock.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Chicago was on lock too, though. Y'all had, you know, y'all had Home Alone. Y'all had Chucky.
We had very different films.
Family Matters.
We did.
Y'all had Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, we did. John Hughes was all about that Chicago.
Yeah. John Hughes was all about repping his head for
Chicago
sure.
Chicago was always in the John Hughes film, from Only the Lonely to all
That's
that.
That's why Cameron had the Red Wings jersey, because it's like, you ain't the star.
Right.
You repping Detroit. You know what I'm saying?
You'd never be a Ferris Bueller.
You wouldn't act like that if you had on a Blackhawks jersey.
Come on, man. You would not. You wouldn't be tripping. You wouldn't be scared to hang out and scared of your pops.
Do you think when Tupac wore the Red Wings jersey, he was thinking about Cameron? You think at any point he was like, oh, this is like Cameron and Ferris Bueller's Day Up?
I think he really resonated with Cameron's character. Like, Tupac was always going against, you know, what was going on. Mm. Like, Tupac, I could see Tupac kicking the Ferrari.
I can definitely see Tupac doing that.
That's what he did with the media. That's what he's doing with all that. He was just kicking the shit out of everything.
Yeah.
And that's what made Pac Pac. So he was looking at Cameron like, yeah. You remember how he was watching that black and white movie on Juice, and he was excited, top of the world. He was like, yeah. That's how he watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
You know what that movie is, right?
That's White Heat.
The original Scarface.
Oh, that was the original Scarface.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was White Heat.
I believe it's the original Scarface.
Mm, okay.
I've been spreading this information around a lot. I really hope it's
later
not.
Later tomorrow. We can look now.
No, that's the not one dig rule it up? Of the show.
Oh, that's the rule?
We don't look anything up.
Oh, no look
up. One rule. Yeah, we don't Google anything.
I think later my top of the world is White Heat. That's what I'm going with.
White Heat.
White Heat with James Cagney.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, I think that's the movie. Later, Ma. Top of the world.
Oh, man. That would suck, because I had so many theories about them putting Scarface in there.
Yeah, I think it's White Heat, though.
I like paying attention to movies in movies.
Yeah.
Like that movie they're watching in Belly with the kids.
Gummo.
Yeah.
Gummo. I was like, what kind of weird shit is this?
Right. Did they make this for the movie?
Right.
Because, like, Home Alone, they got that movie that they made
right
for the movie. You were smooching with my brother.
Yeah.
Larry, Jimmy, Mo with the gimpy leg.
With the gimpy leg.
You were smooching with everybody.
Because I was like, yo, is this a real movie when I saw that?
Right. I was like, I got to see this movie.
And that was a movie, too, that further propelled my interest in box office numbers, because Home Alone was doing crazy numbers when it was out.
Yeah.
It was like, in the movie section, they kept making a big deal about it. Yo, this is the longest number one comedy since Beverly Hills Cop. They would, like, change the promo for it. And it was doing crazy numbers.
I remember the Behind the Music of Hammer. And there's like there's that cover of the magazine, and it's like the top money makers of 1990. Hammer's on there.
Yeah.
In another square is Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
When he got $1 million for a movie, that was a big deal. That was a big deal at that time for an adult.
Yeah.
They were just like, it was a lot of adult actor stars wasn't getting $1 million at that time. You know, so it was just like, yo, this kid really got $1 million for, I forget which movie it was.
Was it My Girl?
No, I don't think it was My Girl. I think it was
The Pagemaster?
No, because I think it was before that.
Richie Rich?
It could have been The Good Son, or it could have been, I forget what movie where he actually got the million. Because, you know, it takes a couple.
Right.
It takes a couple movies for you to get that big bag.
My Girl is when he hosted SNL. And that's when I was like, what is SNL?
Yeah.
Like, there's a kid on TV. I'm supposed to be asleep. He's hosting the show.
He's up. Live.
He's up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He woke.
This is live.
Yeah.
That's my intro to SNL, is like waking up in the middle of the night and seeing Macaulay Culkin on there and being like, all right.
I've never seen My Girl.
Really?
Yeah. Because I know he dies in it, so I refuse to watch it.
Well, yeah, It's a way better movie if you don't know that's gonna happen.
Yeah,
you talking about crying?
Knowing what I knew.
You talking about snot bubble out the nose crying?
Nah, man.
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know. I'm just watching this movie.
Yeah.
And then it's like he's in it, but he's not the star. Mm. He's like the other kid or whatever. And it's like, oh, I know him. And then yeah.
Nope.
I found
he
that out.
He doesn't have his glasses. Man. He gets his glasses.
Nope. I'm like, what? I ain't watching that. Still to this day. I ain't watched Selena either.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you avoid movies where people die?
No. Like, you know, because I
like sad movies rather?
It's not even that. It's just jerkers. Like, why am I going to set myself up for the fact? Because I know how Selena's story ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get, you know, all the attached and like, but some movies I have to watch, like Malcolm X, I knew how it was going to end,
yeah,
but I was ready for the smoke. I was just like, you know what, bring it on, you know. And so I definitely roll up in the face of like sadness and realness, but it'd be just like some movies I'd just be like, I avoided them so long I never would circle back and get back into it. So
yeah,
like Selena and My Girl's like, nah, I might watch them one day.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, because I can handle McCully dying because I watched The Good Son in theaters.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Different type of kid, but he died.
That makes sense.
And that mom made a horrible, that's a horrible position to be in. Which kid are you choosing?
Mm.
And a lot of people be like, I'm sticking with my son. I'm like, the same son that tried to kill your other sibling? Because remember in The Good Son, he tried to kill his sister.
Dang.
So it's like, what are you holding on to?
Yeah.
You going to let the good kid fall down the cliff?
That's a tough one. Tony, how'd you feel being in a Western?
I liked it, man.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was like, yo, we really on a Western set walking around. You know what I mean? Because I like the genre. And, you know, I thought it was super dope that Michael Jai White, he just wanted me to be in it.
Wow.
And that's Spawn one of the dreams.
Spawn knows you.
Man, that's one of the dreams, dog. And it's like, you know, when you come out, I came out here for acting. And then I started doing stand-up, and I fell in love with stand-ups. And I was like, this. But initially, I was just like, yo, let me do stand-up as a way to get into acting.
Really?
Yeah, because I was an actor. I've done theater and stuff like that. And then when I moved out here for acting, you know, thousands of people are out here for that. So you get lost in the sauce. So I was like, man, I can stand out more if I'm a comedian. You know, and then I can transition into
acting. I would have never thought.
Yeah, man.
When I see you perform, I don't see, oh, this guy trying to make it as an actor.
No,
because
once I got a taste,
person. Yeah.
Once I got a taste of stand up, that first open mic, I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And so now, of course, you know, I still act, but it's like, you know, now I know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Michael Jai White was like, yo, I want you to be in this movie, I was like, this is what I was talking about, man. I told Michael Jai White, I was like, you're stuck with me now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're stuck with me. Like, you know, you chose to put me in. You could have got somebody with a bigger acting resume, a bigger name in the acting community. Mm-hmm. You could have easily did that. And you chose me to be in it. So I'm like, you're stuck with me now. So whatever you do, whatever you need, I'm that type of guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're stuck with me. Because you know what I'm saying? You decided to, because, you know, the studios are always going to be like, we're going to go with a bigger name.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All day. And so for him to do that, I was just like, thank you, man. Because a lot of people, you know, won't give you those opportunities. So, and, you know, you want to build a good relationship with a director and a writer. Because I feel like, you know, there's countless examples of actors being in multiple films with the same director.
Yeah, yeah.
So that happens all the time. So it's just like, you definitely want to build a great relationship with filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they come back around. If they like you and they rock with you for real, they be like, yo, man, I got another role in my next project. You know what I'm saying? And so, but it has to be organic. And with Mike, it's organic because, you know, he's been a fan of my comedy for years.
Wow.
So when he did start working on Outlaw Johnny Black, he just hit me. And I was just like, let's get it.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Man, that's what's up, man.
Yeah.
Shout out Michael Jai White.
Shout out to Michael Jai White. Absolutely.
Tyson,
man.
On HBO.
Tyson on HBO. I watched that Tyson. I didn't watch the new one.
No, I haven't watched the new
Tyson
one.
Was like, I don't approve. So I was like, mm-hmm, I'm going to stick mm-hmm. with you, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Michael Jai White played him, he didn't have a chance to really speak on it. He was
right.
busy.
Right. And yeah. So I watched that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, Spawn. What's his name in the Dark Knight? Gamble?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I was like, man, so whatever he needs, I got him.
Tony, what's your favorite color sky?
My favorite color sky is like a real light blue.
Real light blue.
Like, you know how the sky looks when out here, so out here in L.A., the skies are trash. I don't know if y'all know
what?
That.
What?
Skies are trash out here.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get
because it's usually
here.
Ashy. It's usually smogged up. And so you
yeah,
can't get a full.
Yeah, but then when the light hit the smog, it twinkle and glisten.
Nah, man, it's trash. The only time the skies are dope out here is after it rains. After it rains,
yeah, after
it's magic
rains.
Up there.
But now the sunset here with the purple and the pink and
with the pollution mixed in.
Yeah, we hit that pollution one time with the sherbet.
I come from beautiful skies coming out of New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful.
I thought you were going to say Chicago,
no.
And I was going to be like, what?
Once I moved to New Mexico, I was like,
okay.
Yo, the sky is
okay.
on another level in New Mexico. So it's like, so now I'm a sky connoisseur. I'm just like, man, what you bringing to the table? Miami has beautiful skies.
Miami does have beautiful skies.
Yeah, like
yeah.
when I go out there, I be like, man, that's mm-hmm. a good look. And so, but out here, I only like it after it rains.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really nice after it rains.
Oh, man, it's beautiful after it
yeah,
rains.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The clouds are looking robust. And
But driving east to west, sunset, you'll see all kind of reds and purples and all kind.
You got to be in Arizona, though.
Pollution, you know?
Mexico, Arizona, to get the real.
You can get it coming from, you know, Joshua Tree or whatever.
I mean, yeah, but there's a dirt on it that I just there's a dirt on these skies out here in Southern California. It's just like I ain't feeling it 100%. But that light blue, man, it'd be right because I'm definitely a sky gazer type of person.
Yeah,
I'm up there. I'm looking.
Okay,
I'm taking it in. I'm mindful of it.
Mm.
Especially like you know if you go somewhere where you can see. You know, maximum stars. Oh,
mm-hmm.
I'm all in. I'm like, yeah.
Getting
you
away
get
from
away
the
from
light
that
pollution.
Light pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, beautiful up top.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever in the, like constellations or anything
absolutely,
like that?
100%.
Okay.
I was all in, man. Astronomy is like my shit.
Really?
I love astronomy, man.
Okay.
I got an A in astronomy in college.
Okay, you took it when you didn't have to.
Yeah. I was
okay.
like, yo, let me take astronomy because I grew up. Being into the planets and the stars and the constellations. Then I got into, you know, astrology and the zodiacs. And
you're into that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I can never find the zodiac signs in the, mm-hmm, in the, in the mm-hmm, stars. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't, the shapes aren't really, aren't easily identified like Orion
you could tell
and the Dippers.
They didn't have a lot of entertainment.
Yeah,
because
they were forcing
up.
It.
You could tell, yeah, they were forcing it.
You can see
yeah.
this is a bull. I'm
yeah.
like, how is this a bull?
I just see stars. Somehow that's supposed to be a scorpion, but it's not.
I don't
yeah.
see it.
Yeah, I don't see
the
it.
Big Dipper, I got you. It
the
looks
big
like
Dipper,
a big scoop.
You got that, yeah.
And Orion's
yeah.
belt is the only thing that makes sense. The Orion's,
right.
but those three stars that make up his belt. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the rest of Orion...
Yeah,
I don't see it.
I don't see him holding a lion in his
mm-hmm,
hand. I don't see
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see it. Yeah, y'all were desperate for entertainment.
Tony, do you have a telescope?
I did have one, but it disintegrated.
What happened?
It was just outside for too long, and it the little base part just disintegrated.
Mm.
Mike's girlfriend got me one, and so I need to re-up.
Okay,
but I
all
definitely
right.
had one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, and my friend Marcus, he got like a telescope that looked like a water heater.
Okay,
like he bought that life.
Yeah, yeah.
And so whenever
big
the
lens.
Whenever the moon be thirst trapping, he'll text me. And I'm like, yo, man, send me a pic. Because he'll send me a pic of what he sees through the telescope. Fire.
Okay. That's a good telescope when you just send pics.
Fire.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the moon, though.
Okay.
Like, the moon is just, you can never capture a good image on your phone, but when the moon is out here, when you catch that atmosphere moon, mm-hmm. where it changes the color, you get that orange moon, fire.
How would you like it to be like Tatooine, where there's the multiple moons?
I would love that. Or multiple suns, multiple moons. Mm-hmm, I'd be like, man, that'd be a dope visual. Like, I wish the Earth had more moons.
Okay.
And I remember being a kid, I was like, remember when you were little and you first noticed the moon in the daytime?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think, like, because for me, I was like, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah.
What is this?
I thought I had an exclusive. Like, I was like, when I tell people about this, they're going to be alarmed. Like, I need to, like, they need to brace themselves because I just discovered something sneaking around and they're supposed to be around right now.
Right.
Yeah. And then people are like, oh, yeah, no, it's like that sometimes.
I thought I had the inside track, too. Yeah. I'm like, yo, the moon is out in the daytime. You see it? I'm like, yeah, it's always out. I'm like, what? Yeah. I thought it only came out at night.
Right, right. I'm
like, what you doing in broad day?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love how we can only see one side of it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's like, man, turn around.
Mm-hmm. Or we're blocking it sometimes. Sometimes we're in the way.
Right. Imagine though, one day, what if we woke up one day and the other side was showing? Like, the dark side of the moon was showing. So now we're seeing the cratered up side. Oh, snap.
Wait, we don't see the cratered up side on the regular?
No, we never see it from Earth. We only see the same side every time because it's just constantly, it's locked in.
Okay.
So the other side is going to look different. So a lot of people probably wouldn't even notice, but I would. I'd be like, yo, this ain't the same side. Where's the smooth spots?
Wait, so one side of the moon is smooth and the other side is cratered up?
Well, the side facing us has the craters and the smooth sides, and their theory is that since it's the side that constantly faces Earth, it's getting extra gravitational pull. So whenever those impacts were hitting the moon, the maria is what they call the smooth sides. So the lava's coming up and kind of smoothing out those craters. This is the early phase of the formation of the moon and stuff like that.
Okay. I was like, so, lava?
Yeah.
What
so,
you mean lava on the moon?
So it was getting hit, so it was smoothing out some of those craters. But the other side that's not getting that same gravitational pull is more cratered up without the smooth.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
exclusive. These other people, I don't know. Have you ever talked about this anywhere else?
Not really.
See, we can.
We talked about it in astronomy class in college.
Come on, man.
You mentioned the thing.
But yeah, only Tony Baker. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Oh, anything, man, you want to tell the people? Anything you want to promote in the streets?
Check out my podcast. I got 3 podcasts now. I got Daddy Issues, and I co-host that with DC Irvin, Craig Wayans, Chaz Rogers, and Keon Poli. I have the Verbal Cardio Podcast, which is just me. I have guests on occasion. I'll probably be bringing in some new guests this year. I have that podcast. New episodes for that drop every Wednesday. And then I also just started the Ball Brothers Podcast with myself and Kev on stage. So 3 podcasts, man.
Wow, 3 podcasts.
Yeah.
The bakery always got something bakery, cooking, man. Up. It's such a joy to hang with you time. And, you know, yeah.
I love it, man. Have me back.
I would love to have you back.
Have me back.
Yeah, yeah.
The people talk to my manager on the text that you was talking to, which is really me. Which is actually me.
I was texting Tony and it wasn't getting a response. And I was like, oh, this might not be his number. This is a handler of some sort.
You know what it was? It was, we were talking via DM.
Via DM. And then you gave me your number. Off. And then I text you immediately from the number I got in the DM. And then I was like, this isn't the direct line to Tony. No way. This is Tony Industries.
And then when you brought your fake representative. and I brought my fake representative.
Right, right.
That's when we came together.
Yeah,
That's how you handle business in L.A. You got to have the fake representatives
come
together.
You got to speak in the third person. My client, Rob Hayes, would like to talk to your
client.
So
that was really you.
That was me the whole time. Yeah, yeah.
And that was me, the management of Tony Baker. And here we are. We in the studio, man. We got good managers and reps.
Yeah, we got good managers and reps. We made it happen. It's the Inconsistent Podcast with Rob Hayes.
Yeah. Boom. Dirt on the casket, the hurt I couldn't mask it. Mixing down emotions, struggle I hadn't mastered. I choreographed seven steps to heaven.